Hello. This recording is by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, website mbeinstitute.org. The topic is truth, shortest distance between two points. Mary Baker Eddy was the discoverer, founder, and leader of Christian Science, which could also be called the system of divine metaphysics. She is listed as the author of the textbook of Christian Science entitled Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. However, she indicates that she was merely a scribe unto orders, under the orders of God. The textbook is a 700-page book. And to set the stage for what Christian Science is all about, she provides these three introductory quotes at the beginning. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Words of Jesus, quoted by John. Number two, there is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Shakespeare. Number three, oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest. Thou here and everywhere. Mary Baker Eddy. The topic of this prayer treatment, truth, shortest distance between two points, ties in directly with the first quote by Jesus. Einstein gives us a related quote. He says, curiosity has its own reason for existing. Never stop questioning. He also states that if one is faced with a problem, they can never solve it on the same level as where the problem appeared. That implies that one needs to go up higher in order to go forward in solving the problem. Now, sometimes going up higher is to give us a better view of the whole situation. And when we get that better view, we may find that we may be required to go lower before we go higher. In other words, to find the root of the problem. Chapter 6 of the textbook is entitled Science, Theology, Medicine. And there are three distinct sections in that chapter. In the first section, which is entitled Science, on page 115, there are four levels that are distinctly defined. And she starts with the highest level, which is entitled Scientific Translation of Immortal Mind. The second one that is listed is the lowest level, and that is entitled Scientific Translation of Mortal Mind, First Degree Depravity, Unreality, Physical. And the next degree she defines as second degree, evil beliefs disappearing, transitional qualities, moral. The next page, 116, she defines the third degree as understanding, reality, spiritual. Based on the order that she is providing this unfoldment, it implies that we should define what the facts are about reality at the highest level first. And of course, that means, what is God? What is man? And the relationship between God and man. So in looking at that level, then everything below it becomes obvious that it is unlike the truth. But we need to go down to the lower level to find just exactly what is the problem, so that we can understand that it is unlike God and therefore untrue, and therefore can have no influence or power over God's entire universe. It can't touch a single bit of it. And when we find where the problem is, what specific root is rotten, then we have to work our way up through the development of thought until the problem is solved. She tells us that we must explain it away with the truth. In other words, explain the problem away by identifying its exact opposite, which is the truth, and go through the process of reasoning in order to reveal to the human mind the path from where the problem is to the solution. The human mind, due to a built-in, quote, physical, mental evil, rejects anything that it does not already believe is true. So there has to be steps taken, just like Isaiah indicates, where he states, precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little, there a little. Mary Baker Eddy says, don't expect to take one giant leap to get from unreality to reality, because there is a process that is required until such time as one's consciousness is totally to the point of ascension. The title, Truth, Shortest Distance Between Two Points, is not intended to imply that there is not work to be done to stay on that path of truth, which is a straight and narrow path. But on the contrary, whatever seems to obstruct us by staying on that path, we do not submit to any obstruction from being true, but on the other hand, to recognize that it cannot be true because it is not a part of God's qualities. And God's qualities are the only truth in all existence. God is acknowledged in the system of divine metaphysics, or termed Christian Science, to not only be all good, but to be all existence. On page 465, Mary Baker Eddy defines God as incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. Now that definition comes from chapter 14, entitled Recapitulation, which is the summary of the first 13 chapters. And as stated, the title to the textbook is Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, so it is divided into two distinct sections, the first one being Science and Health of the 14 chapters, and chapters 15 through 18 being the Key to the Scriptures. And the title to the chapters in Key to the Scriptures is 15, Genesis, 16, the Apocalypse, 17, Glossary, and 18 fruitage. If we have zero confidence that there could be anything that could solve whatever problem is we seem to be faced with, we may want to study chapter 18 first, because therein we will find 85 different Christian scientists who have given testimonies on 486 that combined between all 85 of them, faced and were solved. And in most cases, they were looking to solve one problem, but found that they had about five other problems that they were not focusing on. And as they progressed in their spiritual understanding, all of them were healed. If one has enough interest to start at the very beginning, then one may desire to start at the very beginning of the textbook, which are those three quotes, and then proceed through the preface, table of contents, and the 17 chapters before they get to the fruitage chapter. However, if one has studied how to read a book properly, they will find that it is recommended that that includes reviewing all of the chapters in a very cursory manner, and it could even be reading only the table of contents, or reading the table of contents and perhaps the first and last paragraph of each chapter. One of the best books available for knowing how to read properly is entitled How to Read a Book, and that is by the former chief editor of Encyclopedia Britannica, and is on our website and is highly recommended. Of course, today people do very little reading per se, and they devote more time to listening than anything else in terms of media and learning tools. And of course, this very recording is a media that is verbal. As of now, we don't provide it in text format. But there is consideration that has been given to doing that. If one contemplates that second quote at the beginning of the textbook by Shakespeare, "There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." If one connects the dot between that quote and one's consciousness, it will become clear that what we want to think goes into the consciousness, and if we think things that are spiritual, then we will fill the consciousness with spiritual facts. Mary Baker Eddy devoted time every hour for self-examination to make sure she was doing exactly that. Jesus was attacked by everyone all the time. Mary Baker Eddy, the same experience. Other top people in their fields are attacked all the time. That can be attributed to the human nature, which is not very good, to be tied to the belief that we are all born as sinners. That is based on the Council of Nicaea from 325 AD, where the governments and the religions had a council called the Council of Nicaea in 325 AD, and they determined that the churches would be in charge of, quote, forgiving sins, and the government would be in charge of everything else. And of course, that means that the medical profession which at that time were witch doctors, were in charge of everything else that had to do with one's health. And as happens, so common is that it was controlled by the greed for money. The churches were happy because they started charging money in order to, quote, forgive sins, end of quote. Now, I say, quote, because it's not possible for one person to forgive the sins of another unless they are in the business of condemning. And then what they need to do is clean out their condemnation in their own consciousness, their own ego. Francis Fluno was one of Mary Baker Eddy's earliest lecturers on Christian Science, and he wrote an article that is only 1.5 pages long, and he lectured as one of his keynote lectures on that topic, and lectures were primarily an hour long. He states that criticism, the title to the letter and the topic of the lectures, that criticism leads to all evil. Not that it's just a minor influence, but it leads to every single evil that exists or is deemed to existing in the long list of evils. Think about that. Mary Baker Eddy devoted that hour that was referred to, or time every hour rather, to do exactly that in self-examination to make sure that she was not condemning anyone. None. And of course, Jesus didn't condemn individuals. He condemned evil, but not personalities. He didn't condemn humans. He condemned the evil itself. He separated the evil from the individual. And that's one thing that is so obvious in his 41 parables. He didn't name any names. He merely said a certain father or a certain son or whomever did this or that. He did not attach a name to an individual, but purposely impersonalized how to heal problems. And Mary Baker Eddy did the same thing. In fact, Mary Baker Eddy says, follow me and my writings only as far as I follow the Christ, referring to Christ Jesus as the way shower. She doesn't say, this is the law, I have written this, and obey it, or else. No, she very humbly said, follow what I tell you in my textbook only as far as it follows what Christ Jesus was teaching, what he was demonstrating, what he was illustrating in his healings. And she further, in the textbook, explains that nothing Jesus did was miracles. Everything was scientifically explained by what she gives us in the textbook, in Christian Science, or otherwise known as the system of divine metaphysics, to show that it was a science. She starts with an introduction on page 146, wherein she states, divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based, and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. Now think of disease as being exactly what that word says, dis-ease. So anything that is not totally concordant, harmonious, and balanced is included. And that would be including sin, sickness, disease, and death. So anything, basically, that is a problem is covered by this statement. And on page 330, she gets down to the brass tacks. She says, when the 32 planks of the platform is understood, and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. And then from pages 330 to 340, those 11 pages gives 32 topics, which are the planks to the platform, which we should be building in order to climb up on top of it to be our platform to then build our spiritual understanding so that we have a scientific method for striving to solve whatever we may face. We teach the system of divine metaphysics in these prayer treatments. And we have about 500 or more on the website. Probably would include any topic that would be of interest. Also, a very fine Christian Scientist that could easily be classified as a genius, he provides a book entitled Treatment or Healing by True Prayer. There's a chapter called Applied Treatment. It includes 1,315 different ailments, describing the ailment in very brief terms, very few words, and then the rest of the topic is devoted to explaining how to solve the problem. It's recommended one does not study that chapter from beginning to end, but only review and study whatever the topic is that one is trying to solve. Otherwise, one embeds in their thought 1,315 different problems. It is much easier to prevent the thought of a problem from entering consciousness than it is to open the door and let everything come in and then try to get rid of whatever you don't want. To see a picture is one good way to embed something in thought. And a picture is created when one reads or one watches a video or sees something with their eyes. Mary Baker Eddy states clearly that we should guard our door of thought against anything that is unlike God. She uses the terms thieves and murderers. Because what are they trying to do? A thief is trying to steal something from us. In this case, steal the truth, hide it, cover it up. And a murderer trying to kill our standard of thinking from a high level and put it out of existence. And that basically is a description of any evil. It tries to obliterate its opposite in any way it can. It uses deceit, deception, decoys, distractions, It tries to divide and conquer, tries to break up any unity whatsoever in any form. You notice what was promoted and even required by some governments when this so-called pandemic was promoted several years ago, and they didn't want any groups, they didn't want anything that enabled one to overcome their policy of isolation. Divide and conquer is exactly the right method if you have a problem and you want to overcome the problem. And that's what searching for the root of a problem is all about. It's like having a crop and the wheat and the chaff cannot be separated at the wrong time, otherwise it tears up the root of the wheat. So it doesn't just get rid of the chaff, but it gets rid of the root of the good. So the points that we're talking about in the title, Truth, Shortest Distance Between Two Points, is where we are and what our goal is that we're striving to attain. And the shortest distance between two points is straight from where we are to where we want to go, but we have to, in the meantime, take care of anything that tries to stay as an obstruction in the way, but we can't ignore it. We have to solve it. So we have to stay on the straight and narrow path, making sure that we are always striving for truth, but we're not striving to go off on the side into a tangent and become distracted. But we must keep our consciousness pure and in the right direction. Here are some other definitions which enable us to stay at the highest level on that path. On page 587 in the glossary, chapter 17, which is part of the key to the scriptures, as mentioned, God is defined as follows: the great I Am, the all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal. Principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love. All-substance, intelligence. And on that same page, 587, is the definition of good: God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, omniaction. What is left out? Nothing. That covers every possible activity, every possible dimension, no matter which direction one looks. How about man? In the glossary on page 591, man is defined as follows: the compound idea of infinite spirit, the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full representation of mind. In recapitulation, chapter 14, page 475 to 477, I will just read the first couple of paragraphs, and there's a link here to click where it'll show everything. Fleshly factors unreal. Man is not matter. He is not made up of brain, blood, bones, and other material elements. The scriptures inform us that man is made in the image and likeness of God. Matter is not that likeness. The likeness of spirit cannot be so unlike spirit. Man is spiritual and perfect, and because he is spiritual and perfect, he must be so understood in Christian Science. Man is idea, the image of love. He is not physique. She says that this is coming from the scriptures. Well, let's go to the scriptures. Genesis 1. That's the first chapter, starting at verse 26 and reading verse 27 and then 31, which is the conclusion. And God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day. Can you be any more clear than that? Now, just so you know what the opposite is about spirit and man being spiritual, on page 200 of this textbook, she defines the unreality. She says, mortal man is not man. Whoever is incompetent to explain soul would be wise not to undertake the explanation of body. Life is, always has been, and ever will be, independent of matter. For life is God, and man is the idea of God, not formed materially, but spiritually, and not subject to decay and dust. The psalmist said, "Thou madest him to have dominion over the works of thy hands. Thou hast put all things under his feet." And of course, that's from King David. Now notice that the statement from Genesis starts off by saying, "And God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness." When Jesus started his ministry, after he overcame the three temptations from the devil and coming out of the desert for 40 days and 40 nights, he thought Galilee would be a good place to go. And of course, that's where he was born to physical sense. And that's where he attended the schools. And then he became a carpenter. So he thought, well, everyone knows me there, I'll begin there. But he was very surprised to find that's the opposite. He was not recognized as someone that was given a mission. And that mission was to show that any problem could be overcome by utilizing the truth. His success was very limited. So he left. Often, those that have been considered friends or people that know one can be the biggest obstacle. Therefore, he went to another area. Here are a few definitions, and under the present design, they're on the home page. And these are the seven synonymous terms. Mind. Source of all mental activity. Spirit, the only substance which is flawless. Soul, spiritual seeing, hearing, feeling, smelling, and tasting. Principle, system, and structure in balance. Principle is actually the structure, and the system comes from mind, because that's all mental activity. Life, living qualities of God. Truth, consciousness and motive, which are the engine for results, enables a measurement so there is no deviation, eliminates errors. love, nurturing all the qualities and recognizing and understanding their wholeness. And there's an index button for each one of those right next to the definitions that were just recited. And that takes you to an entire presentation on that particular synonymous term. Also, the most comprehensive is in a book entitled Your Divinity Revealed by the founder of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, Helen Wright. Chapter 4 is on mind. Chapter 5 is on spirit, and so forth up through the seven synonymous terms, which covers up through chapter 10. That is a very detailed analysis, which includes all of the terms that Mary Baker Eddy utilized in the textbook to define each of the seven synonymous terms. Those are also presented in seven volumes, each volume being on one term, which shows the actual page in the textbook with those terms underlined. So one of the volumes is underlining wherever the word mind occurs, and a second one wherever the word spirit occurs, and so forth. So you can see it in context of how she uses it, and that's very valuable. We also provide a list, an alphabetical list, of all of the terms that were used in the textbook for each particular term. So there are seven tables, one table for each of the seven terms. Another very important point by Mary Baker Eddy is that she says that whenever a problem occurs, we should do our best to solve it at the moment. And she emphasizes that we should not go to bed, if it's at all possible to solve it, before we solve it. Because we don't want to be carrying forward anything left unresolved, if it can be resolved the same day that it occurred. Einstein had heard about Christian Science, but he didn't really take it seriously in the beginning, because he had spent his whole life studying about matter and what makes up the universe, which he thought at the time was matter. In his formula, E equals mc squared, which is regarding relativity, he explained one time in very simple terms. He said, time goes fast if one is doing something that they are enjoying, and time goes very slow if that is the situation. And of course, Shakespeare telling us that there is nothing either good or bad but thinking makes it so. If you connect the dots, it's easy to see that time goes slow or fast depending on how we're thinking about it. Einstein had a friend, his last name was Underwood, and he was on the Atomic Energy Commission for the U.S. government. And what purpose the atomic bomb was created may not have been known to the participants that were developing it, but all of them, except for Dr. Underwood, lost his life. And it was blamed on radiation from working on the project. Einstein asked his friend, how did you survive? And he very openly told him, I'm a student of Christian Science, the writings of Mary Baker Eddy. I was healed through Christian Science. He said he studied it methodically, scientifically, and it was effective. Well, that changed Dr. Einstein's attitude about it altogether. So he took up the serious study of it. He attended the local church. He spent time in the reading room, which gave him an opportunity to be quiet and isolated from the hustle and bustle of the activities outside. As a result, he made these statements after he had studied it thoroughly. Imagine a woman discovered this 80 years ago. That means he must have made that statement right around 1946, because Mary Baker Eddy discovered it in 1866. He also said, "Blessed art thou," because everything that is in this book. That's very significant that he would make that kind of a statement when he spent his life trying to discover the opposite. And he also stated, "Science without religion is lame, and religion without science is blind." Now, the reason he mentioned a woman is because back in those days, a woman could not vote. She could not own title to property. She had a highly restricted set of liberties. And of course, in Jesus' day, they didn't count women or children. When they counted the number of men that attended his hillside preaching on those two occasions of 4,000 at one time and 5,000 at another. So he was probably delivering his message to five times that many. If you would consider there would be a wife and likely several children. In contemplating truth, be sure and remember what it states in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 9. "The thing that hath been is that which shall be, and that which is done is that which shall be done, and there is no new thing under the sun." It's common to think that one can love God and yet have very bad thoughts about a human. There's no line between love and hate. If it's not pure love, it is not love. It's hate. Maybe a word less strong than hate may be utilized, but if it's not pure, divine, spiritual love, then it's on the other side. Colossians offer these words of wisdom. Colossians 1:15-20. "Now Christ is the visible expression of the invisible God. He existed before creation began, for it was through him that everything was made." Now, this doesn't say Jesus, it says Christ. Jesus was a human form and was not God, as he himself says. A Pharisee asked him, "Good master, how can I attain eternal life?" It was a Pharisee that was wealthy. He was a tax collector. Anything that could be bought with money, he had. But he wanted something else. He wanted eternal life. And Jesus said, "Why call thou me good? There is none good but God." And then he answered the question, telling him that he needed to sell everything he had, give it to the poor, and then come and follow him. Well, he went away very unhappy. You could say angry, because he wasn't about to give up what he had spent his life accumulating to get what he thought he could probably buy for money. Jesus did not mince words like many others have said. "Be careful what you ask for." Frederick L. Rawson gave us something else very important. He proved, by doing it over 500 times with his patients, that time is only a mental concept. It's not anything that exists in and of itself. Just like Einstein said about relativity. It's our concept. That's what relative is. What Friedrich L. Rosen proved was that a healing could take place back in time. In other words, once one is aware that there's a problem, they could make the healing effective at that time. And he proved it by doing it, in his own words, over 500 times. Imagine what that could mean. It could mean that all the grief and suffering that one had would be totally wiped out. You have to be receptive. You can't be like the ones in Galilee. And remember what Genesis chapter 1, verse 26 says, and let us, let. Are we going to guard our consciousness so that we don't let the truth be revealed to us? The truth is always true. But are we going to be opening to letting it be recognized by ourselves? Are we going to claim it so that we can benefit from it? The laws of God are embedded with power. Are we going to align ourselves with the laws of God? It's much easier to stay on that straight and narrow path of truth, to get between two points, if we recognize that there's a power that is beyond anything one can experience individually. We can't even experience a degree of it if we're going to block our thought from recognizing the truth. We may end up getting there, but it's certainly not going to be the shortest distance between two points. We're going to be off on a tangent with all kinds of diversions, deflections, probably not only delays, but stoppage, and maybe reversals. Maybe we're going to take one step forward and three back, or three forward and two back. The race between the turtle and the rabbit ran out of energy. He laid along the side of the road to rest. In the meantime, the turtle walked right on by to the finish line. Steady progress can only come about by being intelligently perseverant. Every one of God's qualities is in a matrix, and they must be reflected with all the other qualities on the very same topic. Not only can you not love if it's not intelligent, if you have ignorant love, that's not spiritual love. How about principle? Can you have a structure that is ignorant of the laws that affect the structure? How about substance, which is spirit? Can you define substance if you forget all about intelligence or wisdom or knowing? Can you come to any kind of an intelligent decision if you ignore things that are factual? How about life? If you conduct your life without intelligence, you're not going to have steady progress. you can apply every single quality of God to every single other quality of God, and that's wherein you're guaranteed fulfillment. Mary Baker Eddy says we have to apply the letter and the spirit, means the spiritual qualities. The letter is knowing the text. What is the text telling us? But if we leave out the spiritual qualities of attitude to create the atmosphere that is needed, then we're not going to be able to understand, and as a result, we're not going to come to a successful conclusion. One very important thing to remember is that the more we get the problem out of our thought, the faster will come the success of the solution, and we'll be able to see it in visible forms. We'll be able to feel it. We'll be able to understand why. Everything fits together. It's up to us. Richard Strain was at the end of his rope, working 18 hours a day, or gone from home 18 hours a day, probably transportation time involved. When he got home, he had 6 hours to do everything else. Probably eat dinner, take a shower, whatever time was left for sleep, get up in the morning, get ready, eat breakfast, and out the door. I don't know, he may have only gotten 3 or 4 hours sleep. If he had a wife and family, there had to be some time with that. So he went to a practitioner for solution. That's the only thing he knew anything about in solving a problem like this. And when he explained what his schedule was, she says, "When do you study?" He didn't want to answer that question because he didn't study at all. But he finally told her, "No, I don't study." And she said, "If you don't study 5 hours a day, you will not be able to work out your solution." There it was, very clear. She had two things to say, and she said them, and it was up to him to work it out. God gives us all the tools we need. He gives us the chalk. Of course, today they don't use chalk and blackboards. But he gives us all the tools we need, but we have to use the tools. We have to transform our whole attitude. Something else that's very important, and it will prevent you from healing. It will prevent you from solving your problems, at least on any kind of a permanent basis. We have all the tools we need. And those tools include the examples of some very successful people that solved the problems that they had. And all problems have a common denominator. What did Jesus do in his life? What did Mary Baker Eddy do? What did Frederick L. Rawson do? Here's what he said. We are here for one purpose. And that is to make other people happy. What does that tell us? Clue. Golden rule? Do we want to be happy? Would we like to see other people do things to make us happy? What are we doing to make other people happy? Number one, we give. And we don't think about getting anything from it. But we will receive. Every time we give, we will receive. Maybe in totally unexpected ways and unexpected times. But you cannot give without having a benefit. You multiply when you give. You don't exhaust. You don't deplete. You don't subtract. You multiply, and you don't divide. You multiply. Every time you give, you multiply by utilizing the quality. And it not only goes to whomever receives it, but it goes out into the universe of thought. We have a button on our website that says heal everything. What do you think the first step is in the procedure? We give you a complete presentation on it. What do you think the first step is? You have to convert any element of taking in your life to an element of giving. One of the most popular writers, he based his books on thorough research that he did. So they're more a book of documentary as opposed to being a novel. His name is very common to anyone that reads books. And I watched a video one time about his life. And he receives millions and millions of dollars every time he produces a book. And I don't think it mentioned how many, but, you know, he receives a lot of money because they're very popular books. He has a very good name in writing quality things. And one book he wrote, they made a series of 12 movies about him, about the book. Very interesting. He can't wait to give the money away. He lives in a very modest home. I think it's in Maine, an isolated area of northeast of the U.S. And he can't wait to give it away. Now, he could be foolish and not be intelligent, but he's an intelligent man. So he doesn't just write a check. He gives it based on some very stringent stipulations. It has to be used in a certain way. And I don't know, he's smart enough, he may have someone that monitors what is done to make sure that it is fulfilled according to his specifications. He may put it in a trust fund and have a trustee approve each disbursement. You cannot go to too many lengths to guard and police what you do with money. UNICEF, and normally we don't mention names, but that's a government agency, UNICEF, I think it is. They have these pathetic ads about children, and they look like they're starving to death. I mean, it's pathetic. Their ad is so, I mean, you want to, like, you know, give them every penny you have or ever will have. But does that solve the problem? If anyone has followed what the wealthiest man in the world has been doing ever since Trump got in office, oops, didn't mean to mention that name, but, you know, since January of 2025, he started an agency called DOGE. Well, Trump set it up, but DOGE, Doge, Department of Government Efficiency. And he brought a team of his programmers, and they started tracing all the money that the government was spending. And they found that a huge amount was being spent for USAID. Now, that is promoted as an organization that helps people all over the world. When they did their auditing of it, they found that between 0% and 5% goes to the purpose that they advertise. And the other 95% to 100%, depending on which, you know, which arm of it is being considered, goes to money laundering. That's it. Money laundering. Spread out through Congress. Spread out through all of the non-elected people that are involved. It's a big money laundering operation, and they use images in a video of children that are starving to death to get contributions or approval of how they spend the government money. And it's all to line the pockets of the people that are involved. This big network. It's all big fraud. It's all a big fraud. Same thing with the Red Cross. Claire Barton started the American Red Cross. She was a very honorable, worthwhile woman. In fact, she had an interview about her thoughts on Mary Baker Eddy that are on her website. She couldn't put enough good words together to say what she thought about Christian Science and Mary Baker Eddy. But that was 125 years ago. What's happened in the last 125 years? The Red Cross is a corrupt organization. Corrupt organization from beginning to end. All of the big so-called non-profit organizations that are supposed to be doing something good for people have been corrupted. And like our friend said, the most that ever gets down to the people that they're supposed to get to help them is 5%. That's the most. Some of them pass nothing through at all. So, the Mary Baker Eddy Institute does not recommend that you cut a check for any organization unless you are involved and control where the money goes. I mean, you've got to really trust what's going on. And there's a few. We're not soliciting donations, but I can tell you the Christian Scientists are just as stingy as everyone else. We're friends with several other Christian Science organizations like ours, the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. They get between nothing and a very tiny amount, just like we do. People don't give to the places they really should give to. We get comments from people that say that they can't start their day without going to our website. One of the organizations that we know quite a bit about, they send out 2,000 emails a week offering historic Bible lessons. They said they might get 3 or 4 thank yous a week, and anywhere from 0 to maybe 1 or 2 very small donations. It's a joke. People expect to benefit from studying Christian Science, and on the most part, they don't give credit to Mary Baker Eddy. You know, the board of directors took her picture out of the book the day she passed on. Now she's all but forgotten. They want to get the benefit, but they're not willing to contribute anything to assist the ones that are really offering so much to the public. If you don't convert your life from one of taking, which means for your own benefit, and most people are so busy with their lives that they don't think about giving, they only think about taking, because they have a fear that they're going to run out of what they need. They think it's in limited supply. They think that it's based on matter. And so they're falling for the trap, and they give nothing. You got a lot of things you can give. We have 1,440 minutes every 24 hours. Everyone has something they can give. It could be a talent, a skill. How about love? How about going to an orphanage and doing something good? Spending time with them. Be a big brother or sister or mother or father to one or more. And really treat them like you would your own children. I mean, these are just a few of the tiny little things you could start with. If you just give it some thought, you would find a number of ways that you could be of great help. Mary Baker Eddy asked one of her students that came to her for some guidance. She said, "What do you do when you walk down the street?" He didn't know what to say. She said, "Are you a Christian Scientist?" And then he realized that if he was really practicing what he's supposed to be practicing, if he saw a stray dog or someone in a wheelchair or an accident or, you know, anything, you fill in the blank. Someone in need, about in a grocery store, do you thank the clerk that checks you out? Is there a bagger there? Stores I go to, they have a person at the end that, you know, that bags them or gathers them together. You know, they don't use bags in a lot of places anymore, but, you know, they're there to assist you. Do you give them a tip? Do you thank them? Do you thank the clerk? Do you see anyone walking through the store and they got their hands full of things and they can hardly keep them from falling on the floor because they probably went in to buy one thing and they ended up buying many and they don't even have a basket? Have you done anything to try to help them? Get a basket and bring it to them? Or, I mean, we have opportunities all the time to love one another. Just doing good things for each other that are helpful. I don't mean like the Boy Scout troop. I was in the Boy Scouts, and every Monday, I mean, you're supposed to tell good things that you did the previous week. And three different Boy Scouts, this is a joke, of course, but three different Boy Scouts came from a small little village, and they all, everyone knew everyone else by name. And they named this certain person, and we helped such and such across the street. He said, "It took all three of you to do it?" They said, "Yeah, she didn't want to go." That's not helping someone. Helping someone do something they don't want to do. Be alert to other people's needs and do something about it. Yes, you should be generous with money. But you've got to be very intelligent. You got to be three times as generous. You got to be three times as intelligent for every time you're generous because of all the scams. There are scams every day on these social medias. And they say, you know, spend some small amount of money and within 90 days or within 1 year, you're going to receive this huge amount of money. It happens. They are scattered throughout the internet. We have a warning on our homepage against these scams. In fact, not just the homepage, it's in the header, which means it's on every page. They're trying to get people to go and open an account for this quantum financial system, QFS. And they say, if you don't do it today, you're going to lose out, and you'll never be able to be involved in it. Of course, the whole thing is a lie. Anything that's going to require the population to do is going to be taken care of with great ease and automatically, probably totally automatically. I mean, I don't know for sure how it's going to work, but it could be that one day, instead of having an account at your local bank, you're going to have an account at such and such, which will be your account number at the QFS system. Anyone that tries to give you a sense of urgency to do something with money is likely a scam. If it is too good to be true, it probably is too good to be true. There are no rich overnight systems or scams or schemes to get rich. We have to use intelligence in everything we do. I shall close by reading something that any Christian Scientist has seen and recited many times. And I also will advise you of seven very special prayers that Mary Baker Eddy gave to her final class, which were the most advanced Christian Scientists. And that was in 1898 in her metaphysical college. and they are all entitled Diapason of Heaven. And diapason, if you look it up, means concord. Compound concord. And heaven, no discord there. So diapason of heaven, compounded concord. And she has one for each of the seven synonymous terms: mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And you can find it on the home page. You can find it in the menu, and it'll give you all seven of them. But I'm going to close with the scientific statement of being, because it's directly related to what is the truth. And by the way, if there are any lingering thoughts that come to the surface while I'm reciting this prayer, which does happen from time to time, they will be mentioned after the word Amen. So here's the scientific statement of being from page 468 of the textbook. There is no life, truth, intelligence, nor substance in matter. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. Matter is the unreal and temporal. Spirit is God, and man is his image and likeness. Therefore, man is not material. He is spiritual. Amen. We have covered this in other prayer treatments, but we didn't hear. And that is, if you study that scientific statement of being, you will see that it would be very easy to expand it. Instead of just saying there's no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter, if you're having a problem you'd like to solve, you could put that in there. There's no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter, or whatever the problem is. Just name it. And when it talks about man, think about Genesis chapter 1, verse 26 and 27, where it says we're made in God's image and likeness, and that we are, being an image, we are reflecting it. That's what an image is. It's reflecting the source, and God is our source. So where it refers to man, you could say, and I am an individual manifestation of man, as stated in Genesis chapter 1. I am spiritual. I am not material. Make the prayer your own. Individualize it. Accept it in your consciousness as being effective and powerful, for it is. As Mary Baker Eddy states, the good we do and embody gives us the only power obtainable. It is 8:21 on Wednesday morning, February 4, 2026. Thank you for listening to this prayer treatment on the topic of truth. Shortest distance between two points. The end.